Hey everyone, welcome to the next edition of Taking Stock. Really excited to welcome two good friends of mine, Rob Vojtovich and David Patterson. I work both closely with both of them. Rob has extensive experience in and around quality and regulatory across life sciences and consumer products. And David leads our consumer products, quality and regulatory community. We're going to talk about the strategic imperative of quality in consumer products companies. Quality is something that life sciences companies kind of live and breathe. However, for consumer products organizations, that's not necessarily in their DNA. However, there is a lot of criticality around it. We're going to hit upon some of these issues and how we get consumer products companies to shift their mindset and think about quality, but also the right balance of quality to ensure that they are complying as needed with the regulatory direction and guidance from the FDA, but also not losing their competitive advantage and their ability to get products to market quickly. So looking forward to the discussion, and we'll see you on the other end. Hey guys, welcome to Taking Stock.
Hey Steve.
Hello, Rob. Steve.
Dave, how are you? Nice to hear from you again, David. You are you're a second time guest on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
And Rob, excited to have you join us for the first time. So this is a topic that I've been wanting to talk about for a bit. We're going to talk about quality and consumer products, which is fun for me because I get to learn a ton. This is a topic that I'm still learning a lot about. And Dave, we've talked about this forever. Rob, we've talked about this a bunch over the past couple of years. I really want to have a conversation around the strategic imperative of quality in consumer products and what that means for our consumer products clients and what it means for the industry. But before we dive specifically into consumer products, I want to, for anyone listening, I want to kind of level set around kind of the FDA, which obviously has been in the news a lot recently, but an overview of the FDA in terms of how it functions in terms of setting regulatory guidelines for organizations. Rob, you've got a bunch of experience in and around quality. So I thought maybe you could just kind of level set around kind of how the process works, how they look at different systems, processes. So what thoughts could you share with the group?
Sure. So yeah, the FDA has the power to make these regulations based on the Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act, and they disseminate their rules via their Code of Federal Regulations, and they produce guidance documents that further expound on that. And based on the publicly available warning letters that they issue to industries or companies that are not abiding by those regulations, other companies are able to see what they need to do in order to abide by those regulations. And there's a whole process around how those rules are made. They call it the notice and comment rulemaking, that they propose rules, and these are publicly announced that they're proposing this, and they invite people in the public and industry to comment on them. And based on those responses, they may go through multiple rounds and take some time before final rules are then issued. But people have time to prepare, in essence.
Yep. So you look at, so obviously, even I understand FDA, Food and Drug, I understand that. But could you share a little bit around, at a high level, just the scope of industries that the FDA oversees? I know you mentioned also kind of the food, and that you mentioned cosmetics earlier, but give a sense as to the scope of industries that are under the purview of the FDA.
The number one industry that they cover would be the pharmaceutical industry and biotech. That's the major ones that they spend. They, over the last several decades, you've seen increasing regulations, and those have been the most highly visible compliance failures or areas where they're looking at product safety, because drugs, anything that we put into our body, medical devices, things that affect the health and well-being of people around the world, that's really where we see the most impact. But then it also goes into any sort of dietary supplements, any type of food product, and as you said, cosmetic, things that affect our bodies, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of compliance issues often arise out of from the regulations, not understanding exactly how to implement them, because the FDA doesn't dictate how to implement what they're asking for. They just say, this is what we expect, but not how to achieve it.
So, and I think that's great kind of foundational background, Rob. And David, let me transition to you, and we are going to replay a conversation that you and I have had countless number of times.
Sure.
So let me hop on my pedestal for a moment and state that we have, as Clarkston, done a lot of work for life sciences companies, helping them think about and instill the right processes and levels of compliance to meet the needs of the FDA and the requirements of the FDA. Life sciences companies, this makes sense for them. It is part of their discipline. It is part of their DNA to live in a heavily regulated environment. For consumer products companies, it's less defined. It's a lot more ambiguous as to what quality means. So talk a little bit about, again, at a really high level, kind of your thoughts on what quality means for consumer products companies and why they struggle with defining what it needs to mean within their organizations.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair question to ask. Things certainly aren't as clear for CPE organizations and manufacturers out there. I think quality and regulatory processes are going to look quite different for those groups, for the CPE manufacturers, by comparison to, say, pharmaceutical or med device manufacturers, certainly. But I would contend the imperatives around compliance and ultimately consumer safety still very much exist, right? So that end state objective is going to look similar. They want their ultimate customer to remain safe. They want them to enjoy their product for a long time and really, really leave or generate that brand loyalty that everyone's after. What makes that complicated, or this complicated for CP manufacturers, is that they're often producing a very diverse set of products. Their portfolios are quite varied. So new product development and M&A are going to be introducing things into their portfolios that really, I would say, complicate the quality and regulatory approach. Mm-hmm. And each of these products, I guess what makes that complicated is that each of these products could have very different risk profiles. So for CP manufacturers, any investment in quality is going to need to be measured against those risk profiles. And you really need to dig in and understand exactly what risks those investments are designed to mitigate.
Yeah, and I do want to get into some of those risk profiles. And before we do that, I would love to hear, Rob, so your perspective. Rob, you have you're a quality guy, not just because you're a great guy and you're of high quality, but you've also spent a lot of time in your career focused on quality. Talk a little bit about the differences, just culturally, between a life sciences organization and where you've spent a good deal of time over the past few years in the health and beauty space. Talk a little bit about just the mindset that you see and the differences in mindset across life sciences and consumer products companies.
Yeah, I spent several years in life sciences and pharmaceutical companies from a microbiology quality control perspective, seeing what happens in a company under consent decree. And when I moved into more of the consumer products and health and beauty end of the spectrum, I saw how different the stringent regulations and the strictness of procedural control was in life sciences. And then moving into the consumer product space, I what I often encounter is that the CP clients tend to have a mixture of life sciences executives and professionals working with those from the consumer products background, and they struggle between the two. There's a clash where they struggle with how far they need to take their investments in quality systems and what regulations they actually need to comply with. And that I think that comes from the strictness of life sciences over the decades of seeing what happens to companies that don't comply with these regulations. And like Dave said, about the mixture of OTC products and non-OTC and other products within these companies, these CP companies, and the freedom and flexibility that they had over years in their existing culture and trying to mesh the two.
Yeah. So is it, thanks Rob for that. And for both of you guys, like, let's talk about that, the diverse product portfolio, because that is, you know, cosmetics, maybe not as much, but if you look at a more traditional consumer products companies where you might have everything from, you know, some products that might qualify as medical devices, to some traditional packaged goods, to household cleaning supplies. Like, how do companies develop a strategy around quality when your portfolio is so diverse? Does it need to be a one-size-fits-all type approach? Or are smarter companies thinking about how do we segment our strategy based upon the products in our portfolio?
I'm happy to start. To me, a one-size-fits-all approach is impractical. I think we've seen that fail. I'm sorry?
If not impossible.
That's a great point, Rob. I think we've seen it fail at a number of organizations that have tried to standardize too much, right? And to a degree, standardizing quality processes can yield efficiencies that are attractive. But I think if you're making something that is high risk, it certainly needs to be segmented separately and apart from those items that are low risk that perhaps need less scrutiny and certainly less energy to confirm their efficacy or safety for the consumer. So yep. I think you nailed it, Steve. I think the portfolio needs to be segmented. It's not that each different product needs a different process. I think just a few different stratified segments across the portfolio makes good sense for most manufacturers.
Right. And just to add to that, in systems where it is possible, in quality systems, if you can separate and categorize those products so that if they are held to different standards, you can follow different pathways in the systems that will help you to save time in not having to hold everything to the highest, most strictest level of quality and compliance. And it will reduce the work for you and save you resources, time, money.
Thanks, Dave, for using the word stratify. It's always fun.
I've got the thesaurus open here in front of me. I'm just scratching off the buzzwords I want to make sure I weave in.
Yes. Consulting word bingo. We just hit one. Okay. Awesome. And great job of kind of level setting. I want to kind of transition into a little bit about, let's think kind of like strategically for consumer products executives. Where is one of the interesting things that, you know, I always think about, from my consumer products purview is the consumer. Everything in terms of strategy and direction and business objectives are really driven around meeting the needs of the consumer. When you think about responsibility from a quality perspective, how should organizations be thinking about it? Is your ultimate accountability to the FDA, or is it to the consumer? And the reason why I ask is there are going to be times where perhaps the FDA might let you get away with things, but perhaps you might not be necessarily like living up to your expectation of quality for your consumer. Talk a little bit about kind of like accountability and who you guys believe that companies are ultimately responsible to.
So I think you hit the nail on the head when you're saying that CP organizations are ultimately you know, responsible to their consumer. I don't think anyone is going to come out and say that by design they're going to fall short of expectations around any given governing body, be it the FDA or otherwise. Mm-hmm. I do think that they'll take a disciplined approach into how they meet certain guidelines for the FDA or maybe the US Consumer Product Safety Commission as another example. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately it's the consumers that CP manufacturers are answering to. And that answer is only growing in complexity or being more complicated to answer. And I think what's driving that is probably more personalization in products, the expectations of the consumer shifting to, you know, products specifically designed for their needs. So I think ultimately these organizations really need to intimately understand their consumers and what they're expecting. Rob just mentioned multiple pathways based on kind of these product risk profiles. I think regardless of pathway, right, the destination needs to be the same. You want a high quality product that's going to build a loyal base of consumers. That's just good business. Mm-hmm. But you know, on the flip side, you need to make sure that the FDA is happy or the CPSC that I just mentioned isn't, you know, chasing you down. Yeah. And there's other groups out there, bureaus of consumer protection that will certainly seek out deceptive and fraudulent business practices and are there by design to represent the consumer. So I think ultimately the consumer holds a lot of power here.
Yeah. So Rob, let me ask this, because you've been in the position for the past couple of years where you are having to kind of answer the question of what is good enough? I love the saying, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. And I think it applies here in a lot of ways. But if you're a consumer products company, you're more than likely going to be competing against smaller, more agile companies who are able to get products to market faster and or perhaps able to circumvent some things that you should be doing in the interest of getting products to market faster. So how do you advise an executive when they're worried about kind of what is that right balance of quality versus speed to market, knowing that speed to market is such an imperative for companies right now?
Yeah, so smaller companies do have somewhat of an advantage because they're not necessarily in the spotlight as those larger companies are, and they may have more of a limited portfolio of products to contend with, so they don't have to think about those things that we talked about earlier with different tiered risk levels for different types of products and how to handle them within their systems. When you're talking about quality versus speed and how to balance those, it's really the best approach, number one, to know what the regulations are and what you have to comply with so that you can achieve that endpoint. But one of the things that the FDA is expected to release later this year is additional guidance on computer system validation, moving to a computer software assurance approach. Mm-hmm. And really all this is doing is refocusing people on the risk-based approach that always existed in validation of systems and in designing your quality systems that control this, that aspect of your business. And this is something that I think a lot of professionals are really interested in hearing right now, because what it does is it doesn't necessarily reduce the testing that you're doing for your systems, as long as you've been complying with risk-based approach mentality previously. But what it does do is it alleviates the pressure on businesses to over-document, which is what's been happening in recent years. People just document the heck out of systems. And this is saying, you know what? We want you to focus on critical thinking. We want you to focus on testing all aspects of the system and saying that's what you did, but not over documenting every single detail of the testing. We're going to take your word for it if you show us the end results and you show us the reports. But we don't want you to kill yourself with certain types of systems.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to get that confused with like the critical systems will still need a high level of documentation and assurance. But this is helping, I think, reduce some of the burden for companies.
Yeah, and I think from what I understand of that, you know, switch from, you know, CSV to CSA, it just seems recognizing that innovation is the lifeblood of these organizations. And you don't want to do anything that's going to like truly restrict or constrain innovation. And it's allowing for, you know, if you get to the point where compliance is going to really inhibit these companies and their ability to innovate, then perhaps we've got an issue. So I think you laid that out well. Dave, anything you would add around the topic of quality versus speed to build upon what Rob shared?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for a long time, organizations have been viewing the quality group, I'll call them, as burdensome. I think the traditional quality group can be viewed as burdensome and simply as a cost center, quite frankly. But I think a lot of the more mature CP manufacturers out there are beginning to see that quality can serve as a differentiator and help separate them from the pack. So I think the sooner that organizations can embrace that and embrace the quality groups as being an active player at the table when we're talking about product innovation and including them in the product development lifecycle, right? As early as R&D, certainly all the way through to some of that post-purchase consumer care work, mm-hmm. I think the better off they're going to be. You know, I think the whole question of how much quality is too much or enough, right, is it's going to be around a while. It's a good one to chew on, but I think most are trying to answer that by identifying, you know, how much quality is, how can we achieve the expected level of quality, right, at the lowest cost?
Yeah.
And going through that exercise should quite often yield efficiencies, right, that really do help support speed to market.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge and the opportunity for consumer products companies is finding that right balance. And I think you stated it really, really well, David. It's finding the right level of quality, the required level of quality at the least possible cost is a way that a lot of companies are thinking about it. So this was great, guys. I appreciate the perspective, Rob. I appreciate you walking through kind of some of the foundational elements of the FDA and how they function. And I know everyone will appreciate your guys' perspective on how companies in the CPG industry should be thinking about it. So thanks again, guys. We'll talk soon and stay safe.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. You too.
All right. See ya. So thanks to David and Rob for a great discussion. Again, I value both of their perspectives and really enjoy kind of thinking about that strategic imperative, what quality means for consumer products companies. Like I said earlier, it's not in their DNA. It's not how CP companies are programmed to think. However, instilling that mindset and that discipline to the right level, again, not letting perfect be the enemy of good, is really where consumer products companies need to go to ensure that they're finding that right balance and right mix of quality versus speed. So thanks again, both, for the discussion. We've got some great discussions planned in the coming weeks and look forward to your continued engagement. Have a good one.